Next item on the agenda is Mark E. Williams and Gwen William Davis, number 18-0357. Mr. Woodward, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Mr. Bowman, members of the commission, on this historic date, I have a project here that is not quite as straightforward as the last one. It does involve riparian issues and piers. We're going to go now up to where's my little icon? Anybody yell out?
What, the slideshow? Down in the bottom, isn't it?
Thank you. I've been on the beat only slightly longer than Jeff, so I had trouble with some of this technology. Mark Williams and Gwen Williams Davis, brother and sister, are requesting after-the-fact authorization to retain an 80-foot-long by 4.5-foot-wide private non-riparian pier with a 104-square-foot platform and an adjacent 61-foot-long by 18-foot-wide enclosed boathouse, boat lift, and storage area in Healy Creek, also known as Haley's Creek, emanating from an easement on the riparian property belonging to Mr. Edward C. Doyle, Jr., at 1189 Horse Point Road in Middlesex County. Mr. and Mrs. Doyle are objecting to the existing structures. This project has a lot of history, and I'm better telling stories with pictures. Let me just get right to it. This is Stingray Point, Deltaville, Piankatank River, Haley's Creek. Haley's Creek is a tributary to the Piankatank. This landmass is known as Horse Point. The commission may or may not recall, Mr. Doyle had applied for and gotten a permit for some small sill-type structures in this area to protect this spit some time ago. At issue today is this particular boathouse inside this cove of Haley's Creek. These two boathouse piers belong to Mr. Doyle. A little closer view. Again, these two structures were a part of the original Horse Point. It was a hotel, recreational. They rented horses and boats and everything. Mr. Doyle acquired the property. This boathouse was built off of an easement to the land granted to the Williams property, and the easement was granted for a pier. Going back to 1963, compliments of VIMS, we see that these structures on the property now belonging to Doyle, the boathouses on his property, which again was Horse Point, predate commission authority.
Mm-hmm.
These structures are riparian. They would otherwise, one of the piers would be exempt by code. Neither of the boathouses would be exempt, would require permits were they to come to us today. But they existed before commission authority in 1962. We don't see any pier or boathouse where the Williams structure is today. In the fall of 2017, I was contacted by Mr. Doyle, the owner of the riparian property, and he inquired about some recent construction that had been done on the Williams boathouse. Specifically, a deck had been added where there was an open boat slip finger pier appurtenance to the pier and boathouse. I met with the Williams. I met with their counsel, who is also their agent today, Mr. Bug, and indicated that none of the structures have a permit. They all need a permit because they're non-riparian. They all were built after 1962 when the commission was granted the authority to regulate encroachment over state-owned submerged lands.
How do you know that?
How do I know?
Yes, sir.
1962?
No, how do you know they were built after 1962? Do we have...
The best I could do is 1963.
Correct.
And I've got an aerial photograph, and they're not there. And I've also asked both the applicants and their attorney, and that doesn't seem to be a contentious fact.
Okay. Thank you.
This is dated July 17th, 1972, as part of the easement survey that was granted initially in 1967. Again, in 1972, it gets a little confusing, but we have attorneys on both sides that are going to clear all that up. So I indicated to the Williams and Mr. Bug that they have two options: remove the structure, therefore there is no violation, or apply for after-the-fact permission to retain the structures over state-owned submerged lands. That's what they've done. They've submitted an application to retain everything that is there. As part of our public interest review, we notify the neighbors. In this case, Mr. Doyle isn't a neighbor. In this case, Mr. Doyle is the riparian property owner. He's not adjacent to it. He owns the land upon which this pier emanates from on the easement. The easement is over the Doyle property. He objects. When I indicated to the Williams and Mr. Bug that an application for after-the-fact application could be submitted, I indicated, as I always do, that in no way guarantees it'll get approved. I'm just staff. I make recommendations. It's up to the commission to determine whether projects like that get approved or not. We received the JPA March 12th of 2018. We've been working on this for quite a while. Obviously, these structures have been there for quite a while. The application indicated the boathouse and pier were built prior to 1967 and included a copy of a deed of easement dated 67, I'll get to in a minute, October 10th, 67, which described, and I add quotes, a covered pier which extends 80 feet, into the waters of a cove of Healy's Creek on the east side of the land belonging to Edwin F. Conger, predecessor entitled to Mr. Doyle. That's the easement language I got. Go back. When I got the application, I asked the agent, in this case, again, Mr. Bug, for additional information. When the structures were built, by whom, under whose authority. We got additional information back from the draftsperson who did the drawings you'll see shortly that indicated they misspoke, and that the pier and boathouse were not constructed prior to 1967. The pier was constructed prior to 1967. The boathouse, in fact, was constructed somewhere 73, 74. Again, the boundary line, let me back up. We received now a total of three copies of the deed of easement, all of which are in your book. They vary from a pier, which extends 80 feet, to a covered pier added in front, to a covered pier added in a typo above the wording. As far as staff can tell, not having the legal authority to make such a determination, the copy we received from Mr. Doyle and his attorney that is certified is the copy that's in the courthouse that's recorded, that's the legal deed of easement. Makes no mention of a covered pier, boathouse, any of that. So what we have back in 2012, there is a pier that's been covered by a boathouse and a finger pier. Again, this is the parcel. You see bounded in the broad dark line, and the easement. This is the mean low water line. This is obviously where your jurisdiction begins. He is not waterfront. He is not riparian. Okay, now we've up to current time frame. This is the application.
Well, if he's not waterfront and he's not riparian, then the only mechanism in place, as I understand then, would have to be a lawful easement, correct? Chelsea, who's Bob? I mean, it's only one of a couple ways that you can. This reminds me of the case that. Anyway, if it's not riparian, it's not their property. What mechanism would be in place to allow that access to that structure? What other?
It could be an easement. It could be severed riparian rights and just transferring. There's ways to do it, but if there's a dispute,
mm-hmm.
The commission is not the body to decide that dispute.
Okay. Well, you continue on, and I'll get to what I'm thinking
later. If it helps, and again, I'm not.
No, no, we're good. We're good. I'll lead you into that.
Well, we believe that the state-owned submerged lands in Healy's Creek are not owned by Mr. Doyle. They're not owned by Williams. They're owned by the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Unless there's a King's Grant.
Encroach upon those lands.
And there, for the record, there is no King's Grant, correct?
Nope, not that I've been made aware of.
Thank you very much.
So, this is the application that we have submitted on file today that you are considering, showing the easement, 10-foot wide. Again, this is the polygon representing the property belonging to Williams that does not extend to the mean low water line. The easement going down, the pier coming off of the easement, out into the waters of Healy's Creek. A little bit more detail, we've taken the roof off the boathouse now. It's actually a boathouse with a lift and an enclosed storage area and an open deck. All these dimensions are scaled and measured, and I can verify that they are accurate to the best of my ability. Side view drawing, front elevation, which is the back of the boathouse. And the rear elevation, which is the water side of the boathouse. And here you have it. I don't want to go too fast. I want to make sure I cover everything. So the application is protested by Mr. and Mrs. Doyle. I'm actually taking the photograph from the Doyles, from the middle of the three boathouses on the lot. It's about low tide, as you can see from the photograph. Mr. Doyle's initial letter of objection, dated April 2, 2018, lists three reasons for his objection. The deed of easement dated October 10, 1967, details an easement to a pier only. Two, the verbiage in the application and the drawings do not match. And three, the Williams/Davis family have taken liberties with him, the County of Middlesex, and the Commonwealth of Virginia by constructing the pier and boathouse without permission or permits, has done utility work to the boathouse over his property without permission or permit, and suggests that he should have been made aware that he should have been aware of the required codes and permitting for any such construction. Mr. Doyle submitted an email also on March 28th reiterating his opposition, March 28th of 2018, reiterating his opposition and indicated the application was inaccurate and deliberately misleading. On May 31st, 2018, staff received from Mr. Doyle another copy of the October 10th, 1967 deed of easement and the October 29th, 1975 deed of easement, and an easement survey by Warren Keyser, which I showed earlier, dated 72, as referenced in the 75 easement, which shows a wharf only. And I only bring that up because this is a survey done by a surveyor certified to operate in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and it's a wharf as of 1973. It doesn't appear to be any boathouse there.
But, Kelsey, I have another question on that. If that survey simply showed the pier going out there, a survey without added conditions, codicils, whatever you want to call, does not preclude application for additions to that pier unless there's a legal instrument that says it shall be a pier only. Is that correct?
Are you saying whether they could have applied for a permit for the boathouse?
Yes.
I mean, certainly they could apply for a permit.
My question is, simply because the survey shows a pier on it does not preclude additional structures that the Marine Resources Commission, because I think what I'm hearing is it says a pier only. Well, a pier, I don't think a survey can limit it to just a pier. I think they still have a right that... In other words, the right to wharf out has been established by virtue of a survey that shows a mechanism that provides the capability of wharfing out. Once you're able to wharf out, then you can ask for additional structures by virtue of applying to the Marine Resources Commission. Is that correct?
In terms of whether they have legal authority based on the easement language to build additional structures, I don't know. That, I think, would require more research for me to say definitively whether that the idea of wharfing out in an easement would convey all of the authorities that a riparian owner would have. I can't say. Whether they could have applied for a permit for that boathouse, of course. They could have applied for a permit. They could have applied for a permit for the pier. The commission does not decide land rights or land disputes, but you don't have to ignore that there is a dispute.
But no, we did have a case many years ago. It wasn't somewhere here. Scott called, the style of the case was Scott versus Burroughs Bay Homeowners Association. And that was the case where the dance hall was out there and was destroyed in Hurricane Isabel. And then we determined later on somehow that there was absolutely no riparian capability to access that boathouse. And therefore, it would be an abuse of 28.2.1205 under the public trust doctrine to allow a structure to be built over the waters of the Commonwealth where there was absolutely no access to that could be demonstrated. That's what I'm trying to get to here is to, I understand that the pier is an allowed structure by virtue of the easement. I don't see anything in the easement that limits it to a pier only. Is there something in the documentation that says pier and pier only?
As I get through the rest of it,
yeah,
I may or may not answer your question.
And I think we have attorneys in the audience who will be
talking
to that as well.
I like the impartial version first before we get into the other sides. But anyway, go ahead, Jay. I'm just trying to, because this is, I want to get it right.
I waited until the very last commission meeting in this building to bring this to
Go ahead. Makes my brain work a little bit.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
On September 27th of 2018, staff received a letter from Mr. John F. Faber, Jr., on behalf of Mr. Doyle, outlining the reasons his client objects to the issuance of the after-the-fact approval sought by the applicants. Mr. Faber lists three reasons. Defective application. Content of the application does not meet standards for approval, and applicants have no right to use the riparian property. He also included a sealed copy of the October 10th, 1967 deed of easement between Edwin F. Conger, grantor, and A.T. Loving, Edwin F. Conger, grantor, and A.T. Loving and William Williams, grantees, which references a pier, which extends 80 feet, into the waters of Healy's Creek. And there we have it. The Middlesex County Wetlands Board did not require a permit for this because to them it's a private pier on piles so as to not impede the flow, rise and fall of tide, and they look at it very similar to any other private, non-commercial pier, albeit it's not a riparian pier. The Corps of Engineers indicates by their letter, May 24, 2018, the existing pier and boathouse are authorized by nationwide permit issued on July 19, 1977, and do not require further permitting. Their letter was based on the erroneous information, among other things, I should say. Their letter was based upon the initial application, which said the pier was built before, the boathouse was built before 67. Only the pier may have been built before 67, but not before 62. Okay, I'm going to go through the rest of these slides. It may or may not clarify some things. Standing on the shoreline, looking at the structure in question, this deck here in one of the previous drawings you saw was actually a finger pier that was decked over. This, I believe, was a straw that led to where we are today. That's new construction. This was the new construction, newest construction. Standing on the easement, looking out, again, that's one of Mr. Doyle's boathouses. As we go into the boathouse, looking back toward the land, this area here is a storage area, enclosed storage area. We have a boat lift, which you may see in addition to the new construction of that deck that happened relatively recently. You'll see, where's my little cursor? These are sistered support piles. On the outboard side of the boathouse, that was done as a maintenance by Delta Marine Construction, with their understanding that this was a private, non-commercial riparian pier, which would not require authorization to maintain and repair. In fact, they're required to maintain, repair, or remove. And likewise, the decking, they believe to be under the 400 square feet, therefore didn't require authorization. They had contacted me with a question about that. My answer was, if it's a private pier, you can fix it, send me some drawings, and I can verify it. Did never receive any drawings. Okay. For instance, a covered pier, which extends 80 feet, said covered pier, aforementioned covered pier, whereas it appears, a pier, said pier, certain pier, aforementioned pier. Document on the left was provided by the applicants and their attorney. The document on the right was submitted by the applicant and initially was submitted by, I'm sorry, the document on the right was initially submitted by Mr. Doyle, the landowner. Later, another copy, similar, was submitted by the applicant's attorney. There is another copy where the word covered, instead of caveated above, is added in here as if maybe the document had been retyped. Don't know. I'm not questioning that. I don't know if the commission needs to, but it's just interesting that we have three different versions of the easement. We believe the easement on the right, the language on the right, is the lawful, sealed, certified language.
I've never seen legal documents where they go back and type something over top of something without some type of initial or authentication. Never seen that before. It's like changing a report card.
So where we are today, I believe, is the non-riparian pier and boathouse belonging to the Williams was built after 1962 and as such is not exempt from needing a permit from this agency because it is a non-riparian structure. They are non-riparian structures. Staff has received numerous and varying copies of the deed of easement. We're not here to adjudicate. I'm not adjudicating. I can't say. Other than the fact that there is an easement for some type of pier, be it covered or not, any difference of opinion between the easement holder, the applicant, and the property owner, the protestant, regarding the extent of what the easement may include seems to be a case for them to resolve in the courts. Not appropriate for the commission to decide. We can only make our recommendation on the structures that lie below channel, the structures that lie channelward of the mean low water line. In this case, the boathouse and storage area represents a substantial encroachment over state-owned submerged lands that are not necessary for access to the waterway from an easement granted to the non-riparian owner. Accordingly, staff is recommending approval, after the fact approval, of only the 4-foot, 6-inch wide open pile pier, which extends 65 feet, 6 inches channelward of mean low water, 80 feet total, part of it's up on the upland, with a standard triple permit fee of $300. Given the size of the boathouse, storage area, and deck recommended for removal, and the fact that it has existed in this location for over 40 years, staff believes 90 days is a reasonable period of time for removal of all unauthorized structures. Should the commission adopt this recommendation and the applicant agree to comply, staff would not recommend a civil charge in this matter given the long and involved history associated with the property and the structures. Should the applicant not comply with any direction of the commission for removal within the 90-day time frame, should that be the commission's desire, Staff would recommend forwarding the matter to the Office of the Attorney General for further enforcement action. In the event the Commission chooses to issue after-the-fact permit for the boathouse, storage area, and deck, staff would recommend any such approval include a civil charge to the applicants in the amount of $1,000, given the minimal degree of noncompliance and minimal environmental impact associated with the after-the-fact permit. I had just one other slide for summary. This is the structure we're talking about. And I took the liberty of adding this photograph that was submitted by Mr. Bug on behalf of the Williams of the original pier that emanated from the easement that was granted to A.T. Loving and William Williams, 80-foot structure out into the waters of Healy's Creek. Mr. Bug in his submittal, and that white booklet in front of you is what was received by the applicants in a booklet form where the photographs are in color. You can see them a little better if you want to follow along. But that particular undated photograph, they believe, goes back to, bear with me one second, as stated in their index, undated photograph believed to be before October 10th, 1967, of the dock referenced in the Conger memo, which had been built by Williams and Loving. Williams and Loving are the two gentlemen in the foreground. I would be happy to try to answer any questions you all may have. As I mentioned, both sides are represented by counsel.
Any questions of Mr. Woodward? Mr. Ballard?
I believe it was in here somewhere, but do we have an approximate date of when we believe the boathouse was added?
73 or 74. Okay. When we received a revision, this would be item 2. You'll see it's highlighted. Unfortunately, when it gets highlighted, it's hard to read. Revised August 16, 2018. New information developed since the original application was submitted indicates the boathouse was probably built in 1973 or 1974. So that was a correction that the agent provided to us upon my request for additional information. The boathouse.
Right.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Is the applicant present or represented? You are an attorney, correct?
Dave Bug from Irvington, and I am
I think you were previously sworn somewhere along. You saw me swear a testimony to give me the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name for the record, please.
Dave Bug. I'm a lawyer from Irvington, and I represent the applicants, Mark Williams and Gwen Davis, and I will ask this question.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
I will try to clarify some matters as Mr. Woodward invited me to do. I don't promise. I am older than he is, and so I'm even less proficient with technology than he is, and so therefore the book as opposed to PowerPoint.
Right.
This indeed has an interesting history. If you will flip to tab number 2 in the book, you will see there, and tab number 3 is the same document, but it has a personal note attached to it, and my clients located the original of that personal note, which I have here, and the old-fashioned carbon copy of that memo among the records of their parents, who found them among the records of their grandparents. But what it says, and we believe this is before October of 1967, and it says, and I've highlighted the third, fourth paragraph, I am willing the property known as the Williams property, the house and lot, which has been surveyed, and deed should mention that William Williams and Tom Loving are to have access to a wharf, covered if they wish, from the Williams and property over the adjoining property to the wharf on the creek. Mr. Conger, I think, as Jay indicated, operated an inn on Horse Point, and Mr. Williams, whom he called Captain Billy, worked for him, as did Mr. Loving. And part of his compensation was, he had a lot of small houses on this property. Part of the compensation for Captain Billy was he let Captain Billy and his wife live in this house while he was working for him. When he sold the property, the bulk of which went to the Hayden family, Ann Doyle is a Hayden, he deeded the property to the Williams. The deed of easement, which we'll get to in a minute, actually preceded the deed for the property itself. We believe that this memo predates 1967 because as I read it, it appears to indicate that the pier had been built. And the personal note from William Clark, who was Mr. Conger's secretary, says Mr. Conger has had one of the attached put in with his will. He wanted you to have it in order to keep you up to date. Now, with regard to the deeds themselves, and Jay, tab four in the book, which is also one of the photographs that Jay put up on the screen, that's Captain Billy and Mr. Loving in the foreground working at that table, and I believe that table still exists, as you'll see. But when you get to tabs 6, 7, and 8, there really was a mystery about these deeds. When I first met with these folks, and I actually met with their parents, they gave me the deed that is number 5, 6, and 7 of the three deeds, which has the word covered before pier. And you'll see that it's been signed by Mr. Conger and notarized by Mr. Clark. And if you look down the lower left page, lower left of the second page, you'll see DB 88, page 268. Well, that is the recording information. It wasn't until less than a year ago that I learned that, in fact, and if you look at tab 6, what was actually recorded omits the word covered in front of pier. In those days, you know, nowadays, if you take a deed to the record room and get it recorded, they run it through the computer, and it's on the record, and they hand the original back to you. In those days, it had to be retyped to be put on the record. How it came that covered was left out is a mystery. Gwen Davis got wind of the fact that Mr. Conger's personal papers were in the Virginia Historical Society, so she went to look. And she found this third version, which is a tab 7, which is the one that has covered carotid in. Now, the really interesting thing is that all three of these have been, they're not just drafts. They've been signed by Mr. Conger and notarized by Mr. Clark. Whatever the effect is on this easement regarding these deeds is, as staff noted, a question for the Circuit Court of Middlesex County.
Mr. Bug, I don't mean to cut you short. In trying to wrap around this, you're correct. There, I think it goes back to one of the cases, was it Zapula versus Crown or whatever, that dealt with riparian apportionment. But it's kind of similar to what we're dealing with here, that, and that was the reason I asked the question of counsel earlier. There's an easement there. Regardless of whether you believe who owns what easement, that is upland, and that, as long as there is a method for us, for someone to get to the building under 1205 and the public trust doctrine, then we shall then proceed in evaluating what is appropriate on the submerged lands of the Commonwealth. That's our job here today. Our job is not to go, honestly, I believe it's not our job to go through these deeds and easements and trying to make sense of who did what Where? As long as there is an established easement, we've got to believe that these are credible instruments, that it then becomes our job to separate that from what our job is to do, and that is when it gets wet, then we begin to concern ourselves with what's over that waterway. So I think, in all due respect, we have satisfied through whether it's contested or not, there is an instrument that allows warpage to occur. And our purview today is not, and all, you've done a great job, I don't think that these are our responsibilities or we should be delving into them unless you or the next council that comes up think we are wrong in doing so. But I firmly believe that our job is to assess what's been built on the subaqueous bottomlands of the Commonwealth and not with what's going on in the upland as far as who did what where. Council?
I completely agree with that. And just to add on to that,
please,
us issuing an after-the-fact permit or not issuing it or issuing it for part or whatever has absolutely no effect on the property rights. The property rights either exist or they don't. That's determined by the circuit court. But the fact of VMRC's actions don't affect that.
And to help me out one further, if we were to do whatever we do during the course of appeal and during the course of litigation pertaining to these other matters, if the circuit court finds there is a defect in the riparian access, the circuit court can also direct, just as we can, those structures be removed, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was a pooler that said that the commission, and it was a riparian apportionment case, said the commission should not be deciding questions of law. To follow along with what you've talked about with the easement, I think it's worthwhile to look at the actual language. And I'm using the reported deed at tab 6, where it says that the easement is for the heirs and assigns forever to use a certain pier and an easement to use the waters of the said cove adjacent to the aforementioned pier for the purpose of mooring boats along and beside said pier, and in addition thereto a sufficient area for turning in order that boats may enter and leave said cove from the channel of Healy's Creek. And it also describes the right-of-way up the bank. Why Mr. Conger chose to give an easement, I think, is because there is a roadway that runs between the Williams property and the water that serves Mr. Conger's property.
Okay, I think at this juncture we can move along to the application after the fact application for the pier and appurtenances.
Well, if I may, if you would turn to tab 12.
Mm-hmm.
That is a picture of my clients as children who are playing on the dock. And as you can see in the background, the boathouse is there. The storage area has been there since the boathouse was built. The next tab, 13, shows the boathouse, and it also shows the L-shaped finger pier. And tab 14 is another picture of the L-shaped finger pier that shows the complete pier and shows that it extends channelward a good deal further than the opening in the boathouse. And if you look at tab 16, you will see it's another copy of the picture that Jay Woodward took. This platform actually occupies less of the Commonwealth's bottom than the L-shaped pier did. And these folks have been using it, want to use it for kayaking and so forth.
Okay.
You might ask why the neighbors, after 40 years, decide to oppose this, to make an issue of it.
That's been on my mind.
Well, beginning in 2010 or so, this involved these folks' parents. The Doyles started trying to make life difficult for them. And I guess give you a litany of the things that they have done to these folks. They've planted large, fast-growing trees right along the property line to block the vision. They planted trees across the roadside to block parking. Mr. Doyle has parked his truck across the front yard to block parking. They have put up a spite fence that goes between the building, the dwelling, and the water. They put plantings in that easement down the other side that was shown on one of those surveys. They put surveillance cameras to watch the Williams in a small cottage that's next door, very close to the line. In the course of putting plantings in to block a footpath that the family had used for decades.
I think we've determined there's a neighborhood dispute.
Let me add one more thing.
I'm afraid that it's getting out of the realm of what we're here to determine, and that may serve to prejudice the board. I think we need to get to the. I think we need to proceed to the issue at hand.
Well, this boathouse was built over 40 years ago by these folks' grandparents.
Okay.
I personally was surprised to find out that the statutes creating the authority of this commission to issue permits had been around as long as it has. I dare say, and I think Jay would agree with me, there are probably thousands of structures out there built in the late 60s and 70s before this became widely known that were never permitted.
I'm with you there.
I think if the commission decides an after-the-fact permit because a neighbor wants to get rid of this boathouse under these circumstances, you're setting a dangerous precedent. I've stood before this commission on more than one occasion representing somebody that didn't get a permit and built something. They either knew they should have gotten a permit or they should have known it and tried to defend what they did. I don't have to do that here. Their grandfather built the dock. The gentleman from Delta Marine told them, you don't need a permit. And I would like to add one additional email to the record that was not included in the package, and it was an additional email that Mr. Fletcher sent to Jay Woodward on this past January 15th. That says, in reference to the questions that have been asked, there has been another question in reference to the platform that has been brought to our attention. The question is, was the platform agreed on that there would be no permit necessary? The answer is yes. It was agreed upon that if it didn't exceed 400 square feet, that it would not need a permit. All work done on this project was discussed in detail, was approved with the answer of no, you do not need a permit. And
who's Mr. Fletcher?
He is Delta Marine.
Okay.
He did all of the work on this project.
Mr. Woodward, you've seen this?
Okay. If I failed to include that, it's my mistake. If you look at item 6-1 of your book, that is an email from Alicia Randall, the Delta Marine. That's the name.
Okay, that's okay.
Denying this permit is not going to benefit the Commonwealth. It isn't going to benefit the public. The only person that's going to benefit are the Doyles.
I simply ask you, please don't do it. They've been there for a long time. These people acted in good faith. We ask that you grant the after-the-fact permits. If the commission believes that the resolution of the questions surrounding these instruments is critical, then I ask that the matter be tabled until it's resolved by the circuit.
I think we have... I've made it adequately clear that our responsibility starts at the low water mark. As long as there has been established, whether it's controversial or not, as long as there's been established a mechanism in order to access a structure. Absent that, we would say you just put a structure out there that leads to nowhere. That's not the case here. So we will be handling what's in the purview of the commission at this matter, and certainly adhering to Zapula versus Crown as far as riparian apportionments are concerned.
Understood.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. Anyone else here in support of this project? Wish to be heard? Anyone here in opposition to the project? Good afternoon, sir.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon.
It's still morning.
My name is John Faber, and I represent Mr. Edward Doyle, who's the trustee of the Hayden Land Trust.
You were previously sworn as an attorney, as an officer of the court. So that's what I was getting.
I'm perfectly willing.
Since one has, we'll go the other way. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I like to get attorneys under oath every once in a while anyway. It's kind of fun. Go ahead.
You probably noticed that among many of the flaws that this application has, it has not been signed by the riparian owner, even though the application form requires it to be signed by the riparian owner, because he vehemently opposes it, and we appreciate you taking a few minutes to allow us to address why. First thing I'd like to do is an attorney-like move and object to the introduction of Mr. Bugg's booklet into the record. Of the 19 items that are contained in that book, only 5 can be verified to be what he says they are, and those are the ones that are recorded in the county clerk's office. All the rest of the undated photos, the unauthenticated writings, the supposedly handwritten notes, don't give us any evidence as to who actually wrote them, when they were written, when they were produced, or what they're supposed to say. He's even got in there handwritten notes supposedly going into somebody's will when none of this property was taken by will. It means nothing. All of those documents are void and unenforceable under Virginia law, because in Virginia, we record documents pertaining to real estate when we want to do a real estate transaction. Ms. Block knows that. Mr. Bugg knows that. Everybody here who owns any real estate relies on that. But you can go to the record at the clerk's office and know what your property says. It prevents precisely the situation that we have here today. Somebody showing up 50 years later saying, oh, no, this is what really was intended way back then. Virginia courts don't play that game. They say if you have a real estate transaction, you have one full and final expression of what your intent is, and that is what goes to record. That's it. I'm not going to address whatever you found in your attic all those years later. So everything that he has submitted to you is irrelevant to this transaction, except for these recorded documents. Now, turning to the one recorded document that had some relevance to this transaction, the 1967 easement recorded in the Middlesex County Clerk's Office in Deed Book 88, page 268. The opposition has submitted to you that document certified as authentic by the clerk of the Middlesex County Circuit Court. That's the one that has no mention of a covered pier in it at all. Mr. Bugg counted out, or Jay counted out, the appearances of the word covered in earlier versions or different versions that did not go to record. One that went to record has none of those. That's not a mystery, as Mr. Bugg said. That's intentional. Not a typographic error. There are at least 5 occurrences of that word in there that are not there anymore. And I'm going to move off of the easement stuff right quick, because I understand that what you said earlier, this is not the appropriate place for it. And let me get to that point next. This is not the appropriate place for it. And the commission can decide whether or not this pier and boathouse ought to be there without addressing the easement questions at all. But, Mr. Chairman, since you brought up a couple of easement questions, I'd like to address those from our standpoint. First question, you said, how can they get there if they don't have an easement? And the answer is they can't. They cannot get there. This easement, even the one that we say was of record, is expired. It's an easement in gross. That means it's a personal right. It's not the type of easement that runs with somebody's property. It's an easement like you give to Virginia Power or somebody else. They don't live next door to you. Virginia Power doesn't live next door to you. They get a personal right. And under Virginia law, Section 55.6, you only transfer a personal right like that, a personal easement like that, by deed or will. The applicants have presented no evidence that they have received this easement by deed or will. That means it expired when their grandmother expired, since she outlived least 5 years ago now. That easement is gone. There is no such thing as a perpetual easement. All of them expire eventually. That means they have no right whatsoever over this property to get to the pier and the boathouse. To your later point, the other point that you raised, if the survey shows just here, doesn't that mean you can build other things on top of it? And the answer is no. Under a marina case, an easement case, Hayes v. Archaea Marina, Supreme Court of Virginia decided that very case. Small easement went into Archaea Marina for a limited purpose. Somebody bought the marina and expanded it like crazy. And the
is that a quiet creek? He's saying Archaea.
I say.
Is it AQ? Is it AQ?
Okay.
I just want to make sure I've got my location straight. Thank you.
Pardon
it's all good. No, all good.
Pardon my pronunciation.
No, all good.
We'll call it Archaea.
There you go.
Somebody bought it, really developed it, and the person who granted the easement in the first place said, "You can't do that. I gave you a little easement for a couple of slips, and now look at this place." That's called overburdening the easement. In this case, taking a pier, which was at most 360 square feet at the beginning, and blowing it up over three times that size now, according to the application, is 1,090 square feet, is overburdening that easement. You can't just keep piling on and piling on, as if you've given me an easement for one thing, you've given me an easement for everything. To address a couple of the other things that Mr. Bug brought up, the motivation for the opposition. I also object to his characterization of the parents of the applicant's dispute with Mr. Doyle. This body can't decide who shot John with respect to who was right, who was wrong, who started what. And everything that he talked about, plantings, parking, fences, etc., took place on Mr. Doyle's property.
Sure.
It's not their property. He can do what he wants.
Understood.
Next irrelevant item that the commission cannot decide, the length of time that this has been here. They emphasize, been there 40 years, been there. I'm not sure it's been there. Was built in 73 or 74. Part of Mr. Bug's submission is a 1975 document that transfers Loving's interest in this easement to Mabel Williams, William Williams' wife. That refers to a pier, and it refers to that 1972 survey as accurate. That was in November of 75. So in November of 75, they refer back to a drawing that only shows a pier, not a boathouse. Even if a length of time is the issue, you can't adversely possess or gain prescriptive rights against the Commonwealth of Virginia. The Commonwealth of Virginia owns the bottom. Because you've trespassed on the state-owned bottom for 40 years does not entitle you to a permit to continue that trespass in perpetuity. So the length of time is irrelevant also. So to conclude the part that you can't decide because everybody else brought it up, the easement is irrelevant, whether or not there's an easement. I hope this is not going to be the case, but if the commission decides not to decide and push this thing to the circuit court so they can decide, I urge you not to do
that. Well, I can assure you we're not going to do that. We're going to decide what's before us today.
I understand.
You can rest assured of that.
I understand. That's, again, something that we're not here to decide today. And we dispute any right, easement or otherwise, of the applicants to use the riparian property. We also think that the length of time that it's been there is irrelevant. So let me turn to the standards by which this application really is supposed to be judged, and that is the subaqueous guidelines published by this commission to help all of us understand how these decisions are made, the public trust doctrine, and the case law that governs cases similar to this, in which this commission has denied after-the-fact permits for structures remarkably similar to this one. Let's start with the subaqueous guidelines. One of the things that the subaqueous guidelines asks you to consider is opposition by the neighboring landowner. In this case, as Jay pointed out, we don't have just the neighboring landowner. We have the only riparian owner, Mr. Doyle, who objects to this application. He objects to it for a number of reasons. First, he's got some other plans for this property. You can see that the, you can't see it on this particular drawing, but the boathouse and the pier bisect that property from the east half, from the west half. He's got plans for the west half of the property, and he's got plans for some property that he owns adjacent to that, development plans. This pier and boathouse block the access to the navigable channel from that western half of his property, which is thwarting those plans. More than that, there is an ongoing, as we understand it, violation. There's, on March 30, 2018, the Department of Planning and Zoning of Middlesex County issued a violation for to the applicants for construction work on a walkway leading to this pier and boathouse in the resource protection area that was not done without all the proper approvals. As we understand it, that has not yet been resolved, and it shows up in the public records as a violation on 1189 Horse Point Road, the riparian property, my client's property, not the applicant's property. He's got contracts and documents, and loan documents that say you're going to follow the law with respect to this property, and now there's a violation out there that he did not cause. The pier and the boathouse also expose him to liability. Anybody who's going out there to do unpermitted work within the resource protection area or on this walkway or anything else, slipped and falls and gets hurt, they're on the riparian property. They're not on the applicant's property. So guess who gets sued in that circumstance? And then finally, final impact is that he actually has received tax bills that assess him for the pier and the boathouse. So he's getting tax assessed for a pier and a boathouse that he neither wants nor owns. So these are not...
Has he paid those taxes?
I don't believe he has.
He has? How many years have you paid those taxes?
Since 1971. So these impacts are not theoretical. They're not speculative. They are happening now. And that is the reason for his strong objection to this application. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. McKee, who is also with us today, he is the only other owner of property on this cove, and he's here in opposition as well. I'll let him speak for himself when I'm finished here. The second thing that the subaqueous guidelines ask you to consider is the square footage and design of the boathouse. If you'll take a look at tab number one of Mr. Bugg's presentation, you'll see a drawing in there.
You've objected to that. I don't think it's appropriate to...
If it's in, I'd like to use it against it.
I haven't ruled on that, but I will now. You asked that it not be accepted, because then, and I agree with your motion. It's not
great.
Accepted into the record, because, in all due respect, the documentation is not sufficient in order to provide a detailed track record for it. So, having said that, I think that clears a few things up.
I do appreciate that.
Sure.
The size of this boathouse compared to every other structure on land or on water is enormous. There are two other covered boathouses on this, extending from this property, as Jay showed you. This boathouse is bigger than both of them combined. Certainly bigger than either of them, but it's bigger than both of them combined, we believe. Also, as I stated earlier, the original square footage of just the pier was 360 square feet. This is over triple that. And how Mr. Bugg comes to the assertion that a skinny finger pier extending from the original pier and boathouse is smaller in size than the 108 square foot platform that's there now, and covers less of acres of bed, I'm not really sure. So the size, the sheer size of this structure disqualifies it under the subaqueous guidelines. Next thing that the subaqueous guidelines ask you to consider consider is whether the structures are water dependent. And here we've got a couple of cases to talk about from the commission. The Evelyn case versus the NLRC and the Palmer case versus the NLRC. Palmer decided in 2006, Evelyn decided in 2005. Palmer dealt with a storage shed built on top of a pier, I think into the Elizabeth River, I can't quite remember. That was smaller than the storage shed in this case. Commission said, that's not a water-dependent structure. You could have built that on land and moved whatever you had in there out onto the pier. It does not need to be on the over the water. Therefore, it's not water-dependent under the city of Lewis guidelines. Well, it may have been more convenient for you, which the applicant for the after-the-fact permit argued in that case. Well, it's easier for me to have these things on the pier.
Do you know in that case if the storage shed was appurtenant to or contained as part of the interior design of the boathouse?
I think the case says it was built on the pier, on top of the pier.
Okay.
That's as much physical dimensions as they put in there.
Okay. Thank you.
But
I couldn't remember. I don't remember. I was,
But I think the point is that both the commission and the Virginia Court of Appeals said it's not water dependent. You can move those articles from the land where if there's storm damage, there's less of a threat to the waterways of this storage shed coming apart. So it's not water dependent. In Evelyn, these structures, there was a roof structure that was at issue in that case. Again, an after the fact permit, the commission went out and did a routine inspection and discovered, wait a minute, you had a pier, now you've got a roof on top of it. Come in, either remove it or come in and get a permit. And the applicant said, well, I need shade. I need shade for my activities on the pier. Let me keep it, essentially. And again, the court said no. That's an incidental appendage meant to enhance the primary purpose of the pier, which is to moor boats. You don't get it. You don't turn convenience into water dependency for purposes of civic respect. Now, in this case, the drawings that are attached to the application show all of those features in the Palmer and Evelyn case that were rejected. A storage shed, roof, and in addition to that, this new platform and a boat lift. None of those things really is water dependent, or at least they're just incidental appendages designed to upgrade the convenience for the users instead of the strict pier. Finally, the public trust doctrine. The public trust doctrine, as everybody knows, places responsibility in the hands of this commission to protect future uses of the waters, and especially the Sedlake Grease Bed. In this case, actually in the Palmer case, the other item that they discussed in that circumstance was overcrowding, essentially, the cumulative effect of issuing too many permits for too many piers and too many boathouses over the waters of the Commonwealth. And the Court of Appeals in that case also said one of the reasons the commission denied the after-the-fact permit in that case was cumulative effect. In this case, this riparian property is 3.84 acres. Three piers or boathouses already extend from the shore. Two of them, as you saw earlier, do not require permits or already was permitted. The last one is this large permit, the large boathouse that is bigger than either of the others and dominates the little cove where it sits. So it overburdens and overcrowds that little cove of Healy Creek. That cumulative effect is what we urge you to guard against in this circumstance by requiring both the pier and the boathouse to be removed. We're asking you to go beyond the staff's recommendation and say that both of those features should be removed. I'm happy to answer any questions that any of you may have at this point.
Any questions of counsel? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else in opposition to the project wish to be heard? Yes, sir. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you God?
I do.
You state your name, please.
Edward C. Doyle.
Okay. Proceed, Mr. Doyle.
The little background on Horse Point. Horse Point was about 148 acres altogether. Mr. Conger bought, and then we bought from him. And in that process, when Mr. Conger ran it, it was an inn, and they had little motels that people would stay, and people from all over the world would come and stay at Horse Point. We even had a little brochure made up, sent out all over the world. People all came, wrote little comments on the back, enjoyed their stay. And when we bought it, Billy Williams was the employee. He worked for Mr. Conger, and part of his, I guess, compensation or whatever, he was a fisherman, and A.T. Loving was Conger's adopted son, so there's linkage there. And they wanted some, I guess, way to get them to water without disrupting the people at the inn or Horse Point, so I guess he gave them, at that point in time, an access to build a pier. Now, time has gone on, and after we bought it, Captain Williams still worked for us, wasn't anything. Then you get two kids, and I'm here not for me, but for my kids and my family, for future generations, because we have the almost 148 acres still. And this easement came about, and this issue came about. I came before the commission last year for some breakwaters, and we were objected to by a neighbor. Had they never objected, I would have never known about riparian rights, about my rights under the law as far as how people can get to the water and how they can't, and how they can use my property with or without my permission, and in this case, they're using it without my permission. I have not granted a... I didn't even know what they were doing. We were away on a trip, came back, and all this stuff had been going on. It's just a matter of we're trying to maintain Horse Point the way it was intended and not to be overburdened by everything. And with our rights being overtaken now by younger generations who think they're entitled to do everything, I want to get this straight so that my kids don't have to go through this, so my next kids don't have to go through this. So that's why I'm here objecting to the entire structure, not just to the boathouse.
Thank you. But just a second. Mr. Tankard, yes, sir. Mr. Tankard.
I wanted to... You mentioned taxes.
You've yes.
Been you have been paying taxes.
A little history on this is... You know, you get your tax bill. I don't look at it like I should. We had three boathouses on the tax bill. When we did the bulkheads or the breakwaters out front, Jay came down and surveyed and did everything and said, which one's your boathouse? And I said, well, those two are, and that's... So I went through the process and got that taken care of. Then with the Williams, I called up Middlesex County because they have on there, on your tax bill, it's not defined as boathouse, this one. It just says boathouse, this square foot or that one. So I went to them, and they sent a surveyor down, and he surveyed all of them, and they came back to me and said, this boathouse is getting paid twice, one by the Williams, one by you. We'll give you a credit back. I said, okay. Don't do it until everything's rectified. So I'm still paying taxes on it, and I will continue to pay taxes on it until it's gone. Then I'll stop.
Okay, but by, if I can, Mr. Tankard?
Yes, sir.
By follow-up, you said the Williamses are paying on it as well. So
I assume they are.
That's what they told you at Middlesex?
Well, they told me that you're paying taxes. I looked on their tax record and looked; it had a dock or a pier.
Okay.
And so I'm assuming they're paying taxes, too.
So it's likely an error on behalf of Middlesex.
Right. And I've been paying it since 1971.
Okay.
They don't go back that far when they give you reimbursements, though.
Yeah, I know they don't. Any further questions of Mr. Doyle? Thank you, sir. Anyone else in opposition?
One thing. We had all kinds of stuff to give you, but I'm not going to waste any more time.
Thank you. Would you raise your right hand? Solemnly swear the testimony that you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. State your name. Step in front of the podium, please.
My name is James McKee.
Okay.
I live at 1095 Horse Point Road. I'm the only other neighbor that's on Cove.
Okay.
So as you enter the Cove, my home is on the point opposite the doors and the wheels.
Okay.
So I'm here simply to express my support for Mr. Doyle's position and the fact that I'm there and a landowner. I just thought I'd bring it up.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
Any
you.
Questions? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Ballard has a question, sir. Mr. Ballard has a question for you. Sorry.
I understand you support the opposition, but what specifically about the structure do you object to?
I just really object to the way it seems to have been handled. I'm not a long-term resident. I've been there 12 years. But to me, it just seemed like with the way the taxes have been handled, some of the other issues about the permitting, I just tend to decide with the rules.
Further question?
Follow up. I guess I'll rephrase. If you were to assume that none of that had happened and you have before you someone applying for this structure, would you be in opposition to it?
I think I would be, yes. It's a very small cove. It's not a lot of room back there. The way the tides go, a lot of times that code is not even usable. So I would probably be opposed to it.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else in opposition? Mr. Bug, you have 5 minutes to rebut.
The cases that council cited are cases where after a permit was issued, then some structure was put on the dock, and the question was, are we going to issue an after-the-fact permit for something that was put up that wasn't permitted? And in both cases, the commission said no, and in both cases, the Court of Appeals affirmed.
Familiar with cases.
That's not what we have here. We got.
And I believe one was an appurtenant storage shed on the outside of the building. I think the other one was a roof on top that may have been used as a sun deck or something of that matter. So,
that's correct.
Yes, sir.
But what we have here is a boathouse that's been there for 40 years. And as I said before, removing it is not going to benefit the Commonwealth. It's not going to benefit the public. What I meant to say about the platform was that it doesn't extend nearly as far channelward as the existing L-shaped pier did, as is shown by the photographs. And so, frankly, if you apply... If you balance what the law would call the equities, is this going to benefit the Commonwealth? Is this going to satisfy the public trust doctrine? No. It is simply going to benefit the Doyles at tremendous cost to these folks. Thank you.
Further questions of counsel? Mr. Ballard.
How do you respond to the counsel's statement that the deed was between people that are now deceased and not part of this equation and not a real estate parcel?
The deed says specifically that this easement is granted to their heirs, successors, and assigns. That means it is binding on the grantor of the easement, on the people he granted it to their children, to their children's children, grandparents, and grandchildren of the grantee. And so, yes, that instrument does, in fact, create an easement that flows down the generations, which is exactly what we have here. Council also mentioned that the matter of prescriptive easement, it takes 20 years. We're over 40. Again, that's a circuit court issue. But this instrument does create an easement, which flows to the benefit of my clients who are before you here today. I have any question about that. You look at the language in all versions of it. It's on page 2 at the top, I believe. It says, to you, your heirs and successors, I think they're the two words of you. It's the same thing.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Bogg.
Thank you.
Both attorneys have done a very, very good job for their client. Very good presentations. But we're here today, as we discussed, to handle what's in the jurisdiction of the Marine Resources Commission, which is those matters that are over the water, waterways and subaqueous bottomlands of the Commonwealth of Virginia, as I see it. The question is, do we honor the after-the-fact permit absent and devoid of the conversations that pertain to the easements that get us to the low water mark? I know they have significant history, significant concern by members of both families, but at this juncture, I know that we're here to reserve our deliberations to what is our responsibility as the Marine Resources Commission. So with that, Dr. Neal.
Right. This is a procedural question, because when we term these after-the-fact applications, one of the questions, what would we do if the application had been applied for? And so part of this is the existence of this easement. If it exists, then that's a factor. If it doesn't exist, then obviously we would not grant the application. And so I guess my question is, are we being asked to proceed as if we believe the easement exists? And if not, then this should be tabled until that is determined. I know that's not your wishes, but I either have to pretend the easement exists and proceed that way, or not proceed at all. Those are my two choices. If there is no easement, then I can't proceed.
Okay.
But I'm willing to proceed if we want to make the assumption there is an easement.
I think that there has been sufficient information on the record that there is an easement there. Now, whether the easement is the appropriate easement or whether it's not, I think it's a matter for the court to decide. But I think at this juncture, there's been a number of documents that have been placed into the record that indicate that there is an easement there. And I think at this juncture, and I'll defer to counsel, but from what I've heard, there is an easement in place, and that satisfies the first prong of the whether we proceed or not. That's just that's the way I look at it. Counsel?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think if it helps you to proceed as if you're pretending there's an easement, you can certainly do that. I think perhaps more accurately, we recognize there's a dispute that we are not going to resolve. One side says there is, one side says there isn't. We're not deciding that, and we're moving on to the factors in 1205.
I have one more follow-up mm-hmm. question. So I mean, if I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. So it kind of makes my next question moot. Wrong word, moot. But if there was not an easement and we denied this after-the-fact application, we said the structure had to be removed, who would even be responsible for removing it? I mean, this is a structure that was built by grandparents that we're now saying is not even belonging to the Williams. I mean, would we say that the Balls are responsible for removing the structure? Are they responsible now for applying for an application? I mean, so it's kind of a – I'm happier pretending there is an easement because it raises all kind of questions if there isn't to me.
I would think that if someone has gone to the point of asking for an after-the-fact application to keep a structure, I think the courts likely would look very favorably at the fact that that is, that they, by virtue of asking for that, that they, in a way, accept ownership of that structure.
Okay. I'm done with my question.
I'm not a lawyer, not a judge, but that's, to me, seems. Further questions? Mr. Tankard?
Well, I think there's also something that we have to keep in mind is that Mr. Doyle bought this property from Mr. Conger, somewhat recent memory, and the boathouse was obviously there. You cannot miss it. And we have a further another homeowner who is on the original Horse Point property, who also is a recent owner purchaser. So they've all purchased this property with the boathouse there, and it was not contested at that point. I would think that if I were going to buy a piece of property, I'd want to get every bit of my property that I could get. So I think the circumstances say that the easement is very, very valid. I can't see anything that would contradict. And further, the boathouse was there when they bought it. I can't imagine there can be a real, real sincere complaint here. So I think the numbers kind of speak for themselves, or the actions speak for themselves. I support allowing the pier boathouse to stay. I kind of don't really like the idea of the fill-in of the slip there, but I'd be interested to see what other commission members think.
Ms. Lusk?
I tend to agree with Commissioner Tinkard. I agree that it seems that the boathouse preexisted the purchase by both of the protesters in this situation. I don't see any reason to ask the applicants to remove it at this point.
Further comments? I'm sorry. I'll take Ms. Everett and then Mr. Beller.
I disagree with Commissioners Tankard and Lusk. I think just because it wasn't brought to the attention at the time of the purchase of the Doyles or the other property owner doesn't necessarily mean that now that it's been brought to light, it's acceptable for an after-the-fact permit and that it should stand. And to me, I just wonder about precedents with others who may take action that or therefore see this as, something that could be done with, less repercussions. So to me, I do worry about precedent of, minimal action in granting this after-the-fact permit. So I tend to agree with staff recommendation.
What the staff recommendation? The staff recommendation is?
The approval of 4-foot, 6-inch wide open pile pier, which extends 65 feet, 6-inch channel, where to mean the water and disturb submerged lands of the Commonwealth, a standard triple permit fee of $300.
Okay. Mr. Ballard.
It's certainly a difficult question, and I see all the commissioners' points on it. I think had the applicants actually been the ones that constructed this boathouse, I would certainly be asking for a full removal. Mm-hmm. However, given the fact it has been in place by 40 years, was not constructed by them, I do think that asking for a full removal is not the right course of action. Ms. Everett's point is a good one, that if we just automatically approve all after-the-fact applications, I think we're going to see a slew of after-the-fact applications. I would certainly agree with staff recommendation. I could also vote in favor of retaining the structure because it has been in place for so long. I do wonder if the applicants had considered a more modest structure that isn't twice as large as the other boathouses on the creek. But we haven't discussed that. Just a couple thoughts.
Further comments? Well, I tend to agree. Number one, let's make sure that we get it on the record that this has, that I believe that there is an easement there. I believe, and that's debatable as far as the court's concerned. So, as I said, that passes the initial prong. Number two, this structure, regardless of the record that has been that was objected to and the objection was sustained, there is ample information into the record that this boathouse has been there a long time by virtue of the pictures that were shown. Again, these applicants that are applying for the after the fact did not construct it, and I agree with you, Mr. Ballard. Had they constructed this boathouse, the issue of remaining would be different. As far as the storage area, I do not believe that this storage area is the same type of storage area that was alluded to in case law by counsel. I do recall that to be an appurtenant structure, and to ask that this storage area be carved out of the existing structure as it states, as it sits today, may possibly render it not as stable a structure as it has been. I think the structure has been here a while. I think things have been fine for a while. I don't know what happened on the way to the theater, but something did that caused this to, which was once accepted for many years, not be accepted anymore. But that's not, as I said, for us to debate, but one cannot turn a blind eye to the fact that it has been there a long time, and now there has been a thoughtful decision made that this is now an adverse structure to the development of the area. Although I cannot make a motion, I believe that the just and right thing, it serves no purpose in removing the structure and punishing these folks that bought it and it's been there a long time. Now, having said that, I'd be very interested in seeing what the courts decide, because I have a funny feeling they will be deciding. And if it can provide us further guidance in the future, I would be more than interested in following that rule of law. But at the present time, I believe that the structure should remain. I do believe that the civil charges alluded to in the evaluation be paid, because there is some amount that needs to be paid for the encroachment on the subaqueous bottom lands of the Commonwealth. And I believe that $1,000 civil charge is appropriate. That's just my thought. Matters before the commission for action. Mr. Tankard.
Yes. So, I still believe that the easement, as you mentioned, is pertinent, and I believe that we should give them the after-the-fact permit for the boathouse storage area and deck, and I would include that also with the civil charge of $1,000.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Ms. Lusk. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Opposed.
Mr. France opposed.
Aye.
Aye. You got that? Okay. The question is, Mr. Bug, is that does your client agree to the $1,000 civil charge on the record?
My client does.
Okay, sir. All right. That's all. Thank you very much. Thank you for your presentation.